From Loretto to Latrobe, Allport to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania ranks near the bottom of the list in terms of state economic competitiveness, but we are a leader in high taxes. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler for a Capital Watch discussion. And the left thinks protests and publicity stunts will return them to power. They are wrong. Policy trumps protest. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Broad and Liberty is reporting that a lawyer for the administration of Governor Josh Shapiro is claiming a week's worth of email from a former administrative staff member who alleged she was sexually harassed by Shapiro's former Secretary of Legislative Affairs Mike Verb no longer exist. Verb was forced to resign, but not before Shapiro's office was slow to react to the allegations and then was, well, less than transparent about how the problem was handled. Broad and Liberty writes the revelation of the missing emails, quote, raises the specter that the emails were purposefully deleted because they could shed new light on the scandal, end quote. Shapiro's ham handling of the scandal became an issue last year when he was under consideration for the Democratic nomination for vice president. This latest development threatens to reignite the issue as Shapiro prepares to seek re-election to the governorship next year. Pennsylvania's capital city newspaper, the Patriot News, and its website, Penn Live, are noted for their far-left leanings. So it comes as somewhat of a surprise that the publication is now asking if Governor Josh Shapiro's budget projections are, quote, full of a certain substance that starts with the letter S. Well, the cleaned-up version is that Shapiro is fond of saying he gets stuff done, but his office's revenue projections for the 2025-26 state budget, now under consideration, are so far off from those of the nonpartisan independent fiscal office that legislative leaders have been questioning the veracity of his projections. Additionally, Shapiro's proposed budget contains revenue from two sources that do not currently exist. The state budget deadline is the end of June. Dr. Mehmet Oz ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. Senate from Pennsylvania in 2022, losing the general election to current U.S. Senator John Fetterman. He now is Donald Trump's nominee to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Oz appeared before a Senate committee last week as the first step in a confirmation process. To date, all of President Trump's nominees for top federal posts requiring confirmation have received affirmative votes. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A recent ranking by U.S. News and World Report finds Pennsylvania dwells near the bottom in state economic competitiveness. Another report finds we are among the highest taxed states in the nation. Our Capital Watch crew is here to take a look at those reports. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Good to be back with you, Dave. Thanks.
And we're going to send along good wishes to our pal Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation, who was out on assignment. So, Rebecca, you and I can kick it around. We can get this thing done. It is another interesting week in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA, and that the appropriations hearings or the budget hearings for the Commonwealth have been concluded. And I don't know how closely you followed all that stuff. It seemed like there was a lot of buck passing that people were you know, promised to circle back with the information to the lawmakers. But I suppose that's standard. But it did seem like it was that card was played more often than in times past.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think the biggest takeaway I had just overall was there was a strong disagreement over the amount of spending that's appropriate for the budget. This being the first time that the governor's proposing to take the state budget above $50 billion. And that's a pretty big milestone. We were talking sort of in town here. I remember when it was 25
yes,
billion.
Yes, I remember those days also.
It wasn't that long ago.
Low 20s.
Right, but I guess I'm getting kind of old. So, but yeah, $50 billion. So there also was a little bit of disagreement over how much the state economy will grow over the next couple of years and how much money will be required out of the rainy day funds in order to you know, make ends meet with the budget.
Because what Shapiro is proposing now would burn through what remains of surpluses. And a lot of that's just Biden bucks that came off of the federal printing press.
Right. And the Republican on one side, the Republicans are saying by 2027, those funds would be completely obliterated. So the governor's budget office disagrees with that assessment. So there was a little bit of a disagreement over how fast those funds would need to go.
But nobody anywhere claims that the Commonwealth would somehow spend less money the year after than it did in the year prior. Like,
no.
The spending never goes down.
For sure. That's for sure. We always seem to grow. And the debate is over how much we're going to grow in any particular year. But you're absolutely right. It's always up, never down.
So there was a really interesting, a really notable data point that I came across, that U.S. News and World Report did a ranking of the states, ranking, you know, along many criteria. Pennsylvania got an overall ranking of 40th, which, you know, is obviously not great. But even more alarming, that our economy was ranked at 41st. Among the 50 states, and in fiscal solvency, that we ranked 44th, which is actually worse than California. So, you know, as the listeners have heard me say many times, probably every time on this show, we have a structural deficit. Pennsylvania, like, we're in trouble, where mandatory spending is increasing faster than the natural growth of the tax base from economic growth, and that this is driven by our underlying demographic crisis, and that Governor Shapiro's budget doesn't really recognize any of those realities.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. There were three items in this U.S. News and World Report that we were ranked below number 40. And you mentioned two of them, economy and fiscal stability. And the third one was infrastructure. So those three items are, I think, critical to economic development in the state and how we're succeeding in the economy. Now, we didn't do quite as badly in areas like healthcare, education, opportunity. I mean, we weren't really lighting any bright lights in those areas. But
when we're 43rd in infrastructure,
right,
that is alarming, or at least it should be.
Yes. So these are the things that we really should focus on improving in order to improve our economy and our environment here to bring folks into the state and grow the economy. So you're right. These are the things that the governor should be focusing on in his budget, for sure. And one thing I noticed is in the economy section, they called out a statistic called venture capital per GDP.
Okay.
So, and this is the amount of money per $1,000 of GDP that goes into venture capital. So, in Pennsylvania, it's $2.22 out of 1,000 per GDP. At the national level, it's $6.23. So we're only a third of the national average, right, for venture capital. So this is money that goes into creating new ventures, new businesses, new opportunities. And the other thing that I had noticed around the same time, that Pennsylvania was ranked as 16th in the country as the most expensive state to start a business.
And who did that ranking?
Simplify LLC. This was a report on the study of the most and least expensive states to start a business in 2025.
Wow.
So this this study used data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Federal Reserve, the Tax Foundation, and Energy Information Administration, and others. So it looked at taxes, business filing fees, commercial rent and utilities, labor costs, regulations, and small business lending. Pennsylvania is really behind the curve with business investment and new venture capitals, new businesses, new entrepreneurship. So we're really behind the curve there.
In a free country, with a free economy, private sector investment decisions are voluntary. Voluntary. That the legislature can't pass a bill or the governor can't issue an order requiring businesses to invest and operate and hire here in Pennsylvania. We cannot bind people here. It's like if somebody wants to come, they'll come. And if they don't, they don't. And if they're here and they want to go, they're free to go. And this is why we need our leaders to be wise and to be thoughtful about what the effects of their policies are going to be on the productive sector. Is the private economy a garden to be tended, or is it a beast of burden to be whipped? And you know, too often the attitude in Pennsylvania is if there's a domestic industry, you know, just bleed it. And that attitude is exactly what has gotten us to where we are. I'd also argue that chronic overspending and having government grow faster than the private sector, which has happened in Pennsylvania year after year, decade after decade, that is the prime cause of our economic underperformance.
Well, I think that gets to the point of fiscal stability that this the original study we were talking about here from U.S. News and Report talked about fiscal stability, and that is the long-term viability of the finances of the government, like you said. And this we are underwater as a state with our fiscal stability that we have. You know, bills to pay that we just simply in the long term don't have the wherewithal to be able to support the government that we have.
Government at this scale.
At the scale that we have, right.
And,
you're right.
You know, I mean, if there was any place in America that needed the, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency to focus on state matters, I would say that it's Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, to actually go through the books, find out where all the money is going, and to find ways to get rid of things that we don't need, things that are excessive, things that are wasteful, things that are fraudulent, and to find ways to get more value out of the dollars that are already being taken from the taxpayers.
Right. We're actually number 46 in fiscal stability. So really long-term fiscal stability.
Long-term 46. Fiscal stability.
Yep. Yep.
Whew. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
One area where I think there's some agreement is that Pennsylvania does have a very high corporate net income tax. And that I will give it to the governor. He actually is proposing to accelerate the reduction of the corporate net income tax, which as it stands now is, I think, set to reduce by 0.5% each year, I think, over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to accelerate that to 0.75%,
right.
I believe.
But that at a price. And
sure.
That price is that he wants this tax scheme called mandatory unitary combined reporting, which is a poison pill because it would give to the State Department of Revenue the powers of the IRS for the purpose of assigning Pennsylvania business tax liability to businesses' operations in other states. It would eliminate predictability of tax payments because obviously, the institutional mission of the Department of Revenue is to maximize what? Revenue to the Commonwealth. And so the Department of Revenue will always view your activities in other states to in whatever way will bring the maximum amount of collections to the Commonwealth. And at that point, you know, employers will sue to say that, no, that's not correct, and that the sum in question will go into escrow. So there's no windfall for anybody. Mm-hmm. That the Commonwealth doesn't get to just take that money and spend it, but it also takes the money away from the business and locks it up so that it's no longer available as working capital. Each state has its own system of taxation with its own kinds of taxes and with the differing rates and differing definitions and differing tests of applicability. And so the one thing that you know for sure is that these state tax systems are unlike one another. There is not, can never be a true, you know, apples to apples comparison. And so it's that, it's all of the vagaries that open up when you try to assess somebody's operations in another state. What's also very telling about how this is a total cash grab is that while business profits from other states can be taxed, business losses from other states cannot be counted against PA tax liability. So it's a one-way street for the taxpayer. And again, if you're an accountant or a tax lawyer, this is a bonanza. Like, congratulations, you've just got a lot more business.
Yeah.
But if you're an actual Pennsylvania company who happens to also operate in other states, for multi-state companies that are not yet in Pennsylvania, it's a great reason to stay away. And if you're a Pennsylvania headquartered company who has more business out of state than in state, that's a great reason to leave.
Yeah, that's absolutely opposite of what we need to be doing here in Pennsylvania to bring businesses in the state.
Governor knows that we passed what they called add back provisions, mm-hmm. that the Secretary of Revenue was by law has the power to disallow deductions that he or she believes to be not legitimate. So having done that, that's already squeezed out whatever kind of extra tax collection they think that they're going to get from this, which, you know, it's a phantom. It's like it's like they're chasing leprechaun gold. But because of government greed, there are people who are just so in love with the idea that there is a big pot of money out there waiting to be claimed mm-hmm. and spent, and then you get the political support for having spent it and stuff. But it's not real. It's not real. But in the course of pursuing that, they could do an awful lot of damage to the real world economy.
So you're saying this, we keep hearing about the Delaware loophole.
Yes.
So that is what you're saying is a complete fantasy.
We should be focused on what is really important, which is how do we hammer down the baseline costs of creating and keeping jobs here in Pennsylvania so it becomes the smart business decision for people to choose to invest and locate and hire and operate here in Pennsylvania, recognizing that people are free to choose where they want to go to do business.
Yeah, and if you look at those states that are top of the list, number one is Utah, followed by New Hampshire, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Idaho. And what are some of the things that those states have in common? They have lower taxes, which we've been talking about generally. Mm-hmm. And just an aside there, there was another, we talk about the Wallet Hub survey that happens from time to time.
Right.
The newest Wallet Hub survey came out with the fact that Pennsylvania has the fifth highest tax rates in the country. So Wallet Hub has us number five. So these other states that do well, they have lower taxes generally, fewer burdensome regulations that make it harder for businesses to succeed, expand, create new products, create new jobs, all of those things. And they have, incentives that attract entrepreneurs that mm-hmm. and businesses that we've been talking about here.
Right.
So,
and incentives in the terms of welcoming business
yes,
conditions, not
right.
just like trying to bribe people with cash.
Exactly. Yep. They prioritize balanced budgets and have conservative fiscal policies, which is not what we're seeing proposed in Harrisburg right now, at least not from the governor's budget. So,
and, you know, I mean, Rebecca, you and I have been at this for a few seasons now, and it's the longer time goes on, the more obvious these solutions seem to be, at least to me, to say that you can't let government grow faster than the private economy. You can't let government spend money faster than people can earn it. and that by indulging in long-term debt, especially when it goes for, political payoffs like, bureaucrat pensions and stuff like that, that the more trouble you get in, and again, with the regulatory overkill, with lawsuit abuse run amok.
That's a good one too.
If these conditions are not, kept in check so that they don't become excessive, then that garden that needs to be tended is overgrown with weeds, and you wind up where Pennsylvania has been for far too long, where our annual economic growth is only ever a fraction of the national average. And then year over year, as that dynamic continues, that Pennsylvania, falls further and further behind relative to other states, and we become less important to the national conversation. You see that with the decennial census when Pennsylvania's congressional delegation keeps getting smaller.
Yeah, and to sort of come back to the beginning where we started out with this this survey about the U.S. News and World Report ranking, I think it was interesting. It started out with a description of Pennsylvania and where we've come from, and it talked about how important Pennsylvania has been to the founding of the country and how its history is tied up with the development of the country, and it talked about how it was one of the nation's most important industrial centers for coal and steel and railroads. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to come back to that because we still have all those things that made us successful.
Absolutely.
And there's no reason why we can't be that again.
Yes.
We have the energy. We have all of these assets here in Pennsylvania that can make us a big part of that, national success again. We just need to be able to harness it and get all the resources together in order to make it successful.
Rebecca Euler for governor. That's what I say. Well, this is all the time we have for this week's program. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. So from Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. President Donald Trump's recent address to a joint session of Congress presented the American people a Facebook meme version of the left's governing strategy, protest over policy. The left has been wandering in the wilderness since last November's election, unable to find its footing amid the EF5 tornado that is Donald Trump. His whirlwind, however, has been generated by decades of conservative policy development just waiting the man and the moment. Both the man and the moment have arrived, and the left has been caught unprepared. Aside from perhaps Karl Marx's Manifesto of the Communist Party, the left has no policy depth. Essentially, their strategy is tax, spend, and then protest if they don't get what they want. It is neither an effective electoral nor governing strategy. Thus, the left and its governmental vehicle, the Democrat Party, have been reduced to childish antics. It is typical, perhaps even an American tradition, for the out-of-power party to play the role of the loyal opposition. A responsible political party would do so by presenting cogent alternatives or at least engaging in constructive dialogue. Today's Democrat Party is doing neither. President Trump summed it up when he began his speech, noting, quote, "There is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or make them stand or smile or applaud." In short order, he was proven correct, as they refuse to stand even for a boy battling brain cancer or for a hostage recently released from Russia. It got worse. Congressman Al Green was ejected and subsequently censured after vocally disrupting the proceedings. Many members held up flashcards, a tactic so juvenile, it was parried by Stephen Colbert. Having apparently not embarrassed themselves enough, several members the next day produced a TikTok video of sub-junior high intellectual level. This, however, is and has been the strategy for quite some time. The oligarchs of the left are funding protests on college campuses and elsewhere in the mistaken belief that this will actually impact policy. Of course, the legacy news media will rush in to give airtime to the protesters, and left-wing pundits will pontificate on the cable channels. But the brat fits are essentially ignored by virtually everyone else. Even the left-wing strategy of name-calling has lost its impact. The joke is, how do you tell if you're winning an argument with the left? They call you names. And usually, that name will be one of the ists. Don't give the left its way, and you are, choose one, a racist, a misogynist, a sexist, an ageist, or to add in a bit of variety, a homophobe. You don't even have to be a Republican to get called these names. Pittsburgh Mayor Ed Gainey is currently engaged in what is shaping up to be a losing bid for re-election. Gainey hails from the so-called progressive, read radical left wing of the city's Democrat Party. More traditional Democrats have rallied behind Allegheny County Controller Corey O'Connor, who has the advantage of being, well, somewhat rational. Gainey's frustration boiled over last week, taking to his social media accounts to call Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen Zappala a racist. Zappala, a Democrat, was reelected last year as a Republican after having lost the primary to a Gainey-allied progressive. To say it is highly unusual for a candidate to unite both Republicans and Democrats in such a manner is an understatement. But Zappala exposed the underlying weakness of the party's progressive wing, thus earning the enmity of the mayor and, of course, getting himself labeled an ist. Republicans, conversely, are seldom seen protesting in the streets. The focus of the right has been on policy. Recall decades of Democrat congressional control ended in the 1990s when Newt Gingrich and Republicans developed the Contract with America that outlined an alternative, constructive way forward. They were rewarded at the polls with majority control. Newt Gingrich never disrupted a joint session of Congress or danced on a TikTok video, however entertaining that might have been. The Trump policy tornado has been made possible by decades of serious research and policy development by conservatives. Collected in the often maligned Project 2025, conservatives were ready with serious policies and the messaging to explain them. The left realized this during last year's campaign, which is why they embarked on an effort to discredit Project 2025. It is important to note Project 2025 was developed by the Heritage Foundation, not the Trump campaign. It is the tip of the iceberg of time-honored, well-reasoned conservative thought. Conservatives realized the way to win elections and effectively govern is to focus on the policies that work for the American people. Policy, not protest, matters. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a few weeks away. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 3rd through 5th at the Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. Featured dinner speaker will be Kayleigh McEnany, who served as Donald Trump's first White House press secretary and currently is host of Outnumbered on the Fox News Channel. Additional speakers include John Gizzi of Newsmax, U.S. Senator Dave McCormick, Ned Ryan of American Majority, and Steve Moore of the Heritage Foundation, along with many others. The conference will feature speeches, panel presentations, workshops, and social events. Complete information and registration for the Conservative Event of the Year, the 2025 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, can be found at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening. to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.